AM. Today's research, tomorrow's innovation.
On the line with me is Professor Janssen. Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
I believe that it's been quite a hectic day there on your side by the sounds of things. I know for a fact that you've had plenty of experience in the field. So we're very honored to speak with you today. I'd like to first start off by saying that the NSTF Awards, and these awards are big. It's the National Science and Technology Forum Awards. And Professor, could you tell us just quickly a bit more about your award specifically?
Yes, what the NSTF does is to recognize South African scholars who have made a strong contribution to the development of young academics, young researchers in their fields. And I think that's really wonderful because there's no other such award at a national level. And what's nice about it is it's not one that recognizes individual brilliance, but it recognizes contributions that people make to developing the next generation of South African scholars.
Speaking about contributions, yours is definitely a very significant one, and we're going to be speaking about that in a moment's time. Professor, you are currently the first black dean, as I understand it, at the University of Pretoria, a formerly very much all-white university. Could you tell us a bit more maybe about how this came about? Were you approached for this position, and was it always something you'd hoped for?
Well, no, these are not things that I hoped for. In fact, I never wanted to work at a white university, quite the opposite. But a few years ago, the University of Pretoria had a very enterprising and forward-looking vice-chancellor, a man called Johan van Sail, who now heads up Sanlam. And he had this vision of making sure that this former Afrikaans university was, in fact, transformed as a South African university, you know, with a strong international focus. And so I found that very, very exciting and very interesting, because I did want to play a role in making sure that all our universities, you know, could rise above their racial and ethnic origins. At the end of the day, this university, like any other, is funded by taxpayers, belongs to all of us. And so it's wonderful to be able to play a role, you know, with both black and white students, both black and white staff, to try and create a university that, in fact, sees the world as its playing field and not some kind of outdated ethnic or racial community.
You speak there about racial and ethnic origins. I'm sure you had plenty of challenges that the position came with. Could you maybe highlight for us some of the main ones that struck you?
Yes, I think probably the major difficulty for me was trying to come to terms with the very deep chasm, the very deep divide, socially as well as intellectually, between white and black students on the one hand, white and black managers, white and black academics. That was a huge shock to me, you know, because in a concentrated place like a university campus, you actually are forced to deal with these issues on a day-to-day basis. I found that to be a remarkable challenge. Having said that, you know, I think the University of Pretoria, especially under its former vice-chancellor, was very committed to dealing with those issues as they arose. And so I enjoyed enormous support, you know, and enormous comradeship in trying to make those changes. And I think that this university is unrecognizable from what it was prior to 1994. And it's wonderful to be part of that project.
I'm sure it came with some very, very, well, means for you to sort of make your contributions maybe a bit easier for a position like that. Any experiences that you found since in this position that has been able to help you with your work?
Yes, no, absolutely. The students, you know, I've just been amazed. Our students come from very, very diverse backgrounds. You know, black students come in with very firm ideas about white people. My white students come in with very firm ideas about black people. And one of the things that I found possible is that it's quite easy, actually, to build a common understanding amongst the students that at the end of the day, you know, they all the same and they all have the same kinds of desires, you know, both for university education and beyond. And once we were able as a team to get the students on board, the rest was relatively easy. So I'm just absolutely thrilled to be able to work with young people, Afrikaans-speaking, Zulu-speaking, Sepedi-speaking, etc., because they make it worth one's while. And my view is, you know, if we as university leaders are able to change the minds of our young people about the future, then we're going to have less concerns about how to deal with the past.
You speak there about young people, and of course, such a thing would start from a very young age, even from a kindergarten sort of level, with children coming into school level, pre-primary, things like that. As I understand it, you're a curriculum change evaluator. Give us a bit more about what this position holds, and could you give us a bit more of an idea the challenges that South Africa's education curriculum is facing at the moment?
Well, I think, you know, in many ways, since 94, we haven't really dealt with the curriculum in South Africa. We've dealt with all the superficial things as far as education is concerned, such as outcomes and qualifications and so on. But nobody's really looked seriously at what it is that is worth teaching in the first place. And this is especially true at universities. And so one of the things we said is, how do you design a curriculum that on the one hand takes account of the very different histories of, for example, black and white South Africans, you know, et cetera, and bring that together in a curriculum that is at the same time forward-looking? We had to deal with the painful issues of reconciliation in our undergraduate curriculum. We had to deal with the painful issues of language and language barriers, you know, et cetera. We had to deal with people who feel that this should still be a predominantly Afrikaans university, in spite of the fact, you know, that that would automatically exclude large sections of our population.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of daily struggles that one goes through, you know, in trying to keep everyone on board, as it were. But I think that's also where good leadership comes in, because for me, what good leadership is about is being able to move forward while at the same time including as many as possible. And I think we've achieved some success in that area.
Of course, you're speaking there about plenty of the painful issues, things that might have stepped in your way. As far as you touched on a little bit there, future developments, what do you see?
Well, I think the major future development for me in higher education is going to be to expand the language competence of our students, you know. And that means for sure making sure that students who only know English enough to expand their knowledge of African languages dramatically. Similarly, it's going to be important for black students in general, you know, to be able to gain competence in languages like English and Afrikaans. The more we can take the politics out of language, the more we can take this rawness out of the language debates, and begin to develop a much more inclusive sense about languages, you then begin to deal, as Neville Alexander so beautifully puts it, with other things. You begin to deal with racism. You begin to deal with cultural stereotypes, you know.
Yeah.
You begin to give people access to other people in ways that you would never get, etc. And so I believe at the heart of our future challenge is how to develop an environment in higher education, in schools, and indeed in our homes, in which we value multilingualism rather than, you know, retreat into the lager of our own language.
Professor, you've written a number of articles that I've seen, and most recently, I think, which would be fitting to what you're speaking about at the moment, the one on IDASA, on race and education and democracy after 10 years.
Uh-huh.
You've spoken very much directed at the university there, but as a whole in South Africa, where do you see what do you think our position is currently at the moment?
Well, I think in South Africa at the moment, we've got a very sad situation in that even though our schools and our universities are now more and more, not all of them, by the way, but are more and more racially integrated, our students and our faculties are still socially segregated. And so even though people occupy the same space, you know, I mean, I just come from a tour of our main campus of this university, for example, and I was just looking casually across the campus, and you could see little groups of students everywhere, and not a single one of those groups at anything other than the same kinds of students. You'd see Indian students in one corner, you'd see Afrikaans-speaking white students in another corner, you'd see black. That, for me, is pathetic, but it's also very concerning, you know, because if, and one of the reasons I think it's happening is, as South Africans, we've never really had at a ground level, we haven't had our TRCs, our Truth and Reconciliation Commissions. We shy away as South Africans from talking about difficult issues. And until we are able to break through in putting on the table, especially among young people, some of the complex and difficult issues like affirmative action, like employment equity, like our history, you know, et cetera, we are never going to be able to bridge these divides. So everybody's polite with each other, everybody tolerates each other, but nobody's really engaging in those dialogues. And you can't resolve a country with 350 years of colonialism and apartheid. You can't resolve its problems simply by having dramatic displays of tears and joy, such as the TRC, when on the ground level we haven't started to talk to each other in an intellectually honest way. And that, for me, is really sad throughout South Africa.
Looking back to our history to move forward, I'd imagine. And, of course, it's going to take some time. I'd also imagine that as well. We're going to be coming back with Professor Jansen from the University of Pretoria. We'll be speaking to him more.
STF. Today's research, tomorrow's innovation.
Professor, we come back to see some of the challenges that teachers are facing at the moment. There are prospective teachers where they speak about salaries being a big issue in South Africa. What's your take on that?
Well, you know, I think salaries across the world, teacher salaries across the world, are less than ideal. They're certainly less than in other comparable professions. And so once teachers earn a basic salary, they're very unlikely to increase that dramatically, you know, over the period of their lives as teachers. On the other hand, it is also true that South African teachers, comparatively speaking, are quite well paid. For example, South African and Botswana teachers to other countries. Now, that doesn't take away the fact that I think teachers should be paid much more. But in comparative terms, South African teachers are not paid badly when you look at the overall package. Now,
yeah.
What is crucial, though, is that I think there has to be a way found within the national budget to demonstrate the value that we place on teaching by making sure two things happen. One is that we improve the conditions of work within most of our teachers, tend to operate. I mean, that is really crucial. But secondly, we need to find ways of improving the salary. Now, I just want to say this, though. I'm a teacher. I went into the teaching profession several years ago, and none of us really who became teachers did so because we thought we were going to get filthy rich. We became teachers because we wanted to make a difference. And I just want to balance that notion of teachers as simply existing for material benefits,
yeah,
with the fact that I think the majority of us as teachers do this job because we know for a fact that by making an impact in the lives of young people, we contribute in a special way to the building of a strong democracy. And I think that's why a lot of us are here and not in the private sector.
I was going to be reaching on that point next. It is a very good point you make. You have to have that will to... It's more of bettering people around you to put a big stand on the future for instance, Africa, things like that. But teachers... At the moment, you hear of them wanting to go overseas because the pay is better, and obviously pay, it is an important part of what, as someone who's wanting to go into a career, you got to look at what you're earning. But what I also find interesting is you hear of working environments, for instance, in the UK that are somewhat, I'd like to say, atrocious compared to here in South Africa. What would you believe as far as working environment goes in South Africa, the state of ours?
Yeah. Look, I think in many parts of the Western world, certainly when our teachers end up in places like the United Kingdom, they tell consistently horror stories of indiscipline. and of chaos, you know, of kids being allowed to swear without any kind of discipline that you can exercise. So I think it is true that the working conditions for teachers are, to make a quick buck, are atrocious in many of these European schools. Having said that, the majority of South African students, especially after graduation, who go to teach in Europe for a year or two, come back home, you know.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. And so my view has always been that rather than see this as a brain drain or some kind of a loss to the economy, we should actually see it as a way in which our graduates can grow up, you know.
Experience.
In which they can get international experience, in which they can learn. Very often a lot of our students come out of monocultural schools, you know, out of... I know a lot of my white students teach black kids for the first time when they go to the UK. That's good for them. That's good for their experience. It will teach them tolerance, a broader mind. And they come back, as I've seen so often, greatly enriched by that experience. So, and by the way, somebody else is paying for it. So I like the idea that more than 90% of our student teachers come back to teach in South Africa. And we should not see this as a threat.
There are some limitations with regards to research opportunities and, of course, in South Africa as well.
Yeah, you know, I think that it varies from one place to the next. You know, I still think that South Africa underspends hopelessly as a nation in research and development. You know, and we come out looking very bad compared to other middle-income countries like India and Chile and so on. So, absolutely, there needs to be a lot more money put into research and the development of young researchers than we do at the moment. Having said that, I've also seen a lot of wastage. I've seen a lot of money go into building young researchers without there being some mechanism of accountability, some strong model of mentorship, some way of tracking outcomes, you know. And so part of our problem is that even with the money we have, I don't think we're doing well enough, and it has a lot to do with the lack of leadership and mentorship of young scholars. So simply demanding more money, I don't think is going to solve the problem.
Professor, I've got the impression that I've heard from people I've spoken to before about you. You are quite a political character or personality, should I say. And, of course, a lot of these things do touch your heart. You've spoken about the budget, things like that. If you could... be in charge, where would you like to see more money going to specifically?
Well, let me just correct something first of all. I'm a university professor. I think for a living. You know, I am passionate about my country and about my my work and my students especially. I have absolutely no interest in party political, you know. I think, I think the only role that I have and that more and more South Africans should have is to have the courage to speak boldly about things that they believe are wrong, that are not working. There's a lot of things that are working in our country, and I'd rather be here than anywhere else in the world. But that is not enough. You know, we need to speak out against the fact that in the SADC region, for example, we have one of the most poorly performing school systems. The entire SADC, the Southern African region, despite the fact that we have the largest GDP. Those are the kinds of things I like to speak out about, but that doesn't make me a political character. That makes me a citizen that's deeply concerned that there's not enough of us, you know. And people do it for all sorts of reasons. I've shut up, you know, partly because of personal gain and ambition, and partly because they're politically timid. But I think there's too many things. How do you explain the fact that as a country, okay, we have a president that casts doubts on the origins of AIDS, on the causes of AIDS, and the former deputy president who believes that you can take a shower and deal with the virus? Mm. Where are the voices that says in a poor country that it can be a devastating health message to ordinary people?
It has been said that it has actually been quite devastating to the people.
It's been devastating, but show me one senior medical research in South Africa that has written into any of the major newspapers to say this is a disastrous public health message. That's what worries me. You know, and unfortunately, I get characterized because I speak out against these things, not because I have any political ambition, but simply because it is deadly to our democracy not to be able to talk about these things in an open and honest way. So it's one thing to produce a lot of researchers in our country. You know, it's another thing to produce people who have the courage to be able to, on the basis of their research, speak truth to power. And that is, for me, as serious a problem as having individualists, you know, who are gaining all these awards for their individual scholarship.
Mm. You're speaking about making a stand, and specifically also wrong things that are going in the system at the moment. It does for people, maybe, okay, not a lot of young people listening at the moment, obviously being in school and things like that.
Hopefully they're in school.
Yeah, hopefully that they are in school. But for people that are considering a career, for instance, in research or maybe even in a teaching direction, even if it be at a university, what would you say is sort of the opportunities that they can look forward to, and maybe some words of encouragement for the young people that are looking to get a start in this career?
Okay. The first thing I want to say is that if you want to study teaching, and I can only speak here for my university, you are guaranteed, if you're a student in need, you are guaranteed a full scholarship. In fact, we go much further than simply paying for, you know, tuition and lodging and so on. We also find ways in which to provide students, particularly students from disadvantaged backgrounds, with additional money for them to be able to live comfortably. So there is no lack of support. And the Minister of Education has just provided some fairly major monies to enable us to attract young people to the teaching profession. So there's point number one. Point number two is that people who graduate with a teaching degree, in addition to doing teaching in South Africa, have huge opportunities to be able to live and work across sectors. There's no more employable graduate than a teacher, a student teacher. And so you'd find people, you know, not just working in schools, setting up their own preschools, working for training institutions like in the corporate sector, etc. So the old notion that the only way in which, of course, you use your teaching degree is to work in a school is, I think, outdated. I think our students do that, but they also do a lot more in the education and training field, and that's wonderful. A lot of my students work in the computer industry, for example, where they do training and teaching. So I think there's a lot more scope for teachers and so on and so forth. And then finally, there is nothing more rewarding for those of us who are dedicated to teaching. There's nothing more rewarding than to be able to say and to see daily how your teaching has provided this country with high-level expertise in a variety of different fields. Mm. And that's why a lot of us teach, to be able to get that phone call a few years later to say, because of you as a teacher, I am now able to do this, that, or the other thing. It's not a place for people who want to make a quick buck. I think they must stay away from the teaching profession. It is a place for people who want to make a big difference.
To be an inspiration to others.
Absolutely.
Professor, I'd like to end off by saying you seem to have definitely been a big inspiration by what I've seen. And just to look at some of your most recent awards, if I can just run through them quickly. You've received an honorary award from the Education Association of South Africa in 2005. These are all recent, so 2005 onwards. And I'm sure you know about this, but I'd like to inform the listeners. The International Council on Education for Teaching Award, the Research in Higher Education Award from the South African Association for Research and Development in Higher Education, the National Research Award from the National Science and Technology Forum. That's what we're speaking about today. And, of course, the honorary doctorate from education degree, the University of Edinburgh. Now, just reading that last one, sorry, the honorary doctor of education degree in the University of Edinburgh. Professor, you've been around everywhere. So you have, I would like to say, experience and knowledge in this field. And it's been an honor to speak to you today, sir. And I hope that anyone who is listening and considering a opportunity in this career, or at least a career with education and research, that they've taken something. Any last words from you, Professor?
All I really want, first of all, I'm very honored and I feel humbled by the recognition. But let me just say this, you know, I mean, I grew up on the Cape Flats like any other kid, you know, poor and avoiding gangs and all of that stuff. There's nothing remarkable about me as a person. And I really would like to encourage young people to understand that they have enormous potential. The most important thing is to believe in themselves and to be persistent in getting what they want. And the basic place to start is to make sure that you get a good education and that you go into higher education. And obviously, I'm hoping that some of those would become some of our greatest teachers.
Hopefully so. Thank you so much for your time, Professor Jansen, and good luck with the rest of your career, and hopefully for your students and the inspiration that you give them.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.